Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
Hi.
Hello and welcome to an I Will Survive edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Hey. Saturday's 26-20 victory in College Station was exciting and maddening. Exciting and maddening. Winning with a style few believed the team could muster, and nearly losing with the same tired, unforced errors plaguing the team for what feels like forever, and overcoming a rash of injury that began even before the ball was kicked. On one hand, damn it, this team, will it ever get its act together? And on the other hand, oh yes, these guys are resilient, fast maturing, and clearing hurdles like Edwin Moses. But which is it? Give me a month of home games, a bye week, a soft SEC West, a Nick Saban, and this team's trend line? Well, a lot of season left. I like our possibilities. All right, offense, Jalen Milroe, quarterback, let's go. Lots of kudos to young Jalen Milroe, playing in an incredibly hostile environment against a defense geared to challenge his weaknesses, not Alabama's weaknesses, but specifically his weaknesses. And what does he do? He delivers. He delivers a career high in completions, 21, a career high in pass attempts, 33. He ties a high for touchdown passes in a game with 3, and he delivers a personal high passing yardage, 321 yards. 300 yards for a quarterback is sort of a milestone threshold, and Milroe delivered that Saturday against a very spunky defense, and especially defensive front from Texas A&M. Jalen Milroe has demonstrated, and we certainly hear about his leadership and his work ethic. On the field, we see his toughness and his resilience. The sack by Edrian Cooper, blindside sack by Edrian Cooper, did force a fumble. That was one of six sacks on the day. Milroe shakes it off, stands up, gets back into the pocket. His next play mentality, his resilience, the way he just lets a play go and comes back and continues to play the drive, continue to play the next play, doesn't let one play bleed into the next, a bad play especially bleed into another play. We see that week over week, and we're seeing him even get better in that as a fan base, as Milroe continues to evolve at the quarterback position. In the second half, Alabama fans were treated to a little bit of a short passing game. That's good play calling by Reese. That's a good schematic, and certainly Milroe executing those in a way that maybe we didn't quite see in prior weeks. We also saw Milroe throw the ball away once in what looked like an exaggerated attempt to throw the ball out of bounds. He got just barely out of the pocket, and he delivered probably 20 rows up. He threw the ball out of bounds, but it was good to see, as opposed to him just running out of bounds and losing yards. And we talked specifically about that in last week's show, and we talked about how we will start to see progress in that area. So I got a kick, I got a particular kick out of the exaggerated effort to throw the ball out of bounds. Yes, Jalen did have a fumble, and there was an interception. But remember, we're not asking Jalen Milroe to walk on water. We're asking him to walk out front and truly be a leader for this team. Not a figurehead, not the quarterback who's supposed to be the leader, but truly walk out front and be a leader for this team. And we're seeing that. As fans, we're seeing this. And if we're not seeing this, we're being willful and not seeing it, or we're just simply not paying attention. You know, Stevie Wonder can see some of the improvement that Milroe's making on a week-to-week basis, and certainly as fans, we are seeing it as well. I do believe Saturday in College Station was a watershed moment for Milroe and for the team. This was a breakthrough moment for Milroe and for the team. I think as we enter the rest of the season, the second half of the season, this Alabama team is going to play with more poise, and we'll start to polish things up. The next month of homestand certainly is going to help in that regard, but I believe this team is going to work harder and play with more confidence as a result of this moment, of passing this moment, of walking through this crucible moment. And I am building it up a little bit because I think there's materiality to it. And I think this Alabama team is going to demonstrate a new resolve, a new personality over the second half of the season. And that certainly can be fun to watch us as fans. All right, let's break through the rest of the individual positions again, much like we do. Let's talk offensive line. And offensive line played like Oprah Winfrey. You get a pre-snap penalty. You get a pre-snap penalty. You get a pre-snap penalty. Everybody gets a pre-snap penalty. We've talked about it before. These are the types of penalties. Not everyone gets one. You can get one, but not everyone gets one because it kills too many drives. Well, guess what? Everybody gets one. At least on Saturday they did. It was amazing how many pre-snap penalties the offensive line, I think there was one drive where there was three in a row. There was certainly that drive, one of the guards got two in a row. Now, I went back and watched that, and the TV crew did the replays, and maybe there was a little bit of a move on the first one, but I did not see a move on the second one. Maybe he passed gas or something, and one of the officials saw a cheek quiver or something, but I didn't see a false start on one of them. But nonetheless, you take one away from the total count, and not that big of a deal. It's a lot of sloppy play. There's a lot of opportunity to get cleaned up there from the offensive line. You add to that 6 yards or 6 sacks allowed and a net 23-yard rushing total, and you wonder how Alabama could get out of the state at all, much less with a win. That's a terrible set of sort of metrics or numbers that we're looking at. But at the same time, and this is crazy, but at the same time, man, I really thought the offensive line played well. Certainly demonstrating their improvement. They're not a finished product, but the improvement that we're seeing, and certainly that we saw on Saturday, you have to look through some clutter, but there's some really good stuff there. Again, we're playing an all-star. Saturday, Alabama played an all-star defensive line that was stacked up against the run, and they were successful in limiting Alabama's running game. It was a hostile and historic crowd that this Alabama team played against, but the line did show improvement. The snaps improved. Again, we're not walking on water here. We're not asking for perfection. We're asking for weekly improvement. Seth delivered that on Saturday. Caden Proctor is playing his part. He is improved week over week over week. The rotation with Elijah Pritchard, Pritchard's playing well, I think, also. And the rotation is driving competition between the two of them. If one of them lays a turd and the other goes out and plays all world, we'll stop the rotation and we will play the better of the two. Both of these guys know that. And so when they're on the field, the fact that they feel that a little bit of a competitive pressure, a little bit of a competitive edge is good. And it's improving the line play across the board, certainly in the presence of those individuals. And I cannot overstate Jaden Roberts on Saturday. He played, it was a late scratch. Darian Dalcourt has a little bit of a shoulder. And so Jaden Roberts stepped in. Jaden Roberts stepped in ahead of Terrence Ferguson, who's coming back from an ankle. Ferg did play a couple of snaps. but rotated back out, and Jaden Roberts came in and played well as a whole on Saturday. He's physical. He's quick. He has a nastiness. He's certainly capable, and I think he certainly intensifies the competition at that guard position. What can't be overstated is Jaden Roberts. You can hear me say his name a couple times, foreshadowing there. Jaden Roberts is the third string right guard. Let that sink in a little bit. He's not the starter. He's not a rotational guy like Booker was last year, which is kind of a co-starter. He's not the number two that just barely sort of edged out, got edged out. He's the third. He's the third guard at that position. And what he did stepping in to any game and not laying an egg his first starting opportunity, he went into College Station against Texas A&M, against that defensive line, and had one of the better days of any of the linemen that Alabama fielded on Saturday. That is damn impressive. If that's the caliber of talent that is available to Alabama, available to the competition, this line's going to continue to improve. Dalcourt, God bless the kid, may have just been Wally Pipped. So that's something to keep an eye on. Ferguson may come back and have an opportunity. Jaden Roberts may have leapfrogged Terrence Ferguson as well. So that'll be interesting to see. Now, a lot of opportunity for improvement across the offensive line, and we're going to talk about that in the context of running backs. Jace McClellan had 12 carries for 45 yards. Rodale Williams had 6 for 9. And I think Alabama did play a short bench at the running back position against Texas A&M. The overall numbers at the running back position were virtually non-existent. And what do you have to say about that? I give a lot of credit to Texas A&M. In that regard, the offensive line certainly can improve. And the running backs, for my money, we've got a free Justice Haynes. I like Jace. I like Roydell. I think they're average SEC backs, probably at best. And Justice Haynes has the opportunity to be one of the top-end backs in the league. And so I think there's an opportunity to get Haynes into the rotation. I think we start to see that in the second half of the season. If it were fantasy, if it were a game of fantasy or sort of a video game, I'd take the top four running backs, Jace, Roydell. I would include Jamari Miller, and I'd throw Justice Haynes in there, and I'd say they all get 10 carries, and let's see who wins. Now, we don't play video games. We can't sort of iterate in that way, but we can give Jace 10, and we can give 6 to 8 to each of the others. We can divvy it up by drives. There are things that we have specifically seen Coach Saban do in the past. There's a way to give the seniors, the upperclassmen, sort of first right to the field, but the youngsters at the running back position for this year's Alabama team, the youngsters is where it's at. And I think the team desperately needs to see that. If there's a home run threat at the running back position, it's a force multiplier to what this offense can do. If that threat is real, if that threat is there, then that's something that Alabama needs to bring to bear if it's there. Now, all of that said, Jace, the bobbled catch, his knee was down when he first touched the ball. It bobbled into the air. I don't think he did it intentionally. It's just you're getting your balance and you're tracking to the ball. His knee came off the ground and he caught the ball, and he wasn't down when he caught it. He had touched the ground with his knee, got back up, caught the ball clean, and was able to run for a first down. That was a critical 3rd and 15. I think he would have gained 9 yards, and so it would have been a 4th and 6. Alabama spun the ball away to get that first down at that point in the game, late in the game, was quite incredible. And Jace there with his athleticism making the play, and maybe his hand, maybe he has good hands, maybe just a split second of bad hands worked in Alabama's favor. Sometimes it's funny how that happens, but the ball bobbled. He was able to get back on his feet. And again, I don't think that was intentional. I just think he's tracking the ball into the air. So he lifts his body weight up, and now his knees are on the ground, and he's able to scamper for the first down. That was a big play. Serendipity, is that what we call it? Sometimes serendipity works in your favor. I like what Gene Stallings, Biebs used to say, you create your own luck. And that was certainly an incident of created luck there. Let's talk about wide receivers, and you have to stop the discussion with Jermaine Burton, and it certainly was the Jermaine Burton show. There was a lot of excitement, 9 catches for 197 yards, 2 touchdowns. There was some drama. There was a penalty and nearly another with some mouthiness from Burton. I thought the A&M players were pretty dang mouthy, and that Burton sort of fed off of that, and they fed off of each other, and then Burton got a penalty off of that. Watch for other teams to try to get under Burton's skin there. So that'll be an interesting sort of development over the course of the season. And the Jermaine Burton show also had a little bit of tragedy with a fumble. And in fact, a big turnover in the moment that it happened. It was 24-17. The ball game was, so it was a 1-score game. Alabama was at their 18 and turned the ball over, and it bailed out. Burton and Alabama was bailed out subsequent, rather than scoring. A&M did a field goal attempt, and that was blocked, and we'll talk about that on special teams. But that was a pivotal moment where Burton, you know, it's easy to go back and say, you know, you play the result, right? A little bit you do. Had he broken the tackle and gone for a big run, that'd be great. We love his ferociousness. Had he just gone down, some people are going to get on him. He has no fight. And, of course, he fights and then he fumbles, and you wish that he hadn't have done that. And so there's a myriad of sort of reaction. Damn it, I just wish he had gone down, because that really could have changed the tenor of the game had A&M put a score on at that point. It's a whole new ball game. So sometimes possessing the ball, and we talk about this on the podcast, when in doubt, possess the ball. And so when in doubt, let's possess the ball. I think that was a first down play. Maybe it was a second down play. Possess the ball. You've gained yards. Just go down, live to fight another day. And I wish that had happened. But at the same time, Jermaine Burton played an incredible day. And in fact, I don't have this in my notes, but I was messaging with a group of sort of our support team during the game. Jermaine Burton on Saturday, he reminded me, it just struck me like a flash. He reminds me of Ardarius Stewart, a really talented receiver, athleticism that really sort of just pops off the screen or pops off the field. And we saw more of that Saturday from Burton than maybe we have in his entire tenure at Alabama. A little bit of spark and personality in his game, a little bit of rawness in his play, and Ardarius had, and certainly saw a little bit of that from Burton. And the more I started to think about that idea, and the more they talked about the relationship between Milroe and Burton, I thought the analogy really holds up. It stands up to a little bit of scrutiny. I've read this in now a couple of articles, and I think they talked about it on the CBS broadcast, where Milroe and Burton, you know, Burton says, just throw the ball up. Let me adjust to it. Let me run to it. Let me run under it. If you're a little bit, just put it up. I'll adjust to the ball. And I thought, you know, that reminds me a lot of our Ardarius Stewart and Jalen Hurts. There were times where Jalen Hurts would just throw the ball up and Ardarius would go get it. And I particularly remember there was a Tennessee game in Tuscaloosa, a late drive for Alabama to go ahead and win. And there were three straight, it was one possessions, it was three straight plays or 3 out of 4 plays where along the sideline, Alabama was driving to the north end zone. So it would have been the east sideline. Along the east sideline, it's just pitch and catch with Ardarius, you know, sort of up in the air, catching the ball along the sidelines. And it was very similar. You've got a run-prone quarterback whose accuracy we're still sort of figuring out. I think at this stage of development, Milroe's accuracy is better than Hurts was at that point in time. But the point being, there's some similarities. And then you've got a receiver that just says, put it up. I got you. Put it up. I'll get it. Stewart delivered on that day. Ardarius did. And then Jermaine Burton certainly delivered Saturday for Milroe and for Alabama. Isaiah Bond really emerged as well on Saturday. We've long known that he's talented in his speed, but he had 7 catches for 96 yards, a touchdown. He had a long of 52. That would normally be the star of the day Just Burton had twice as many yards, which is amazing. Malik Benson, you got to block on the wide receiver screen, buddy. You got to block on the wide receiver screen. That would have been a much better play there. Let's see. Mini game balls for offense. I'm going to give two. Jaden Roberts, for all the things that we talked about. We were very effusive in our praise of Roberts. Started Saturday. Very little notice. Daukert dressed and went through warmups, and apparently he had a shoulder. I don't know all of the story. I'm going to presume that shoulder had been bothering him. And so Jaden probably got a few more reps during practice. We don't know this to be true, and probably had an inclination that he might play. We don't know this to be true. I just suspect that it probably is. And it was a game time decision. Daukert was, during warmups. And so I suspect that there was some pre-knowledge there, but still, it doesn't matter. He's a third-string tackle or third-string guard that came in and started in one of the more hostile environments that Alabama will play in, and against one of the better defensive fronts, especially the DLs that Alabama will face this season. And Jaden Roberts, I thought, acquitted himself very, very well. I'm also going to toss a mini game ball in the direction of Caden Proctor. We continue to see his improvement. And on the Edgerrin Cooper hit of sort of blindside sack of Milroe, the ball came out and Proctor was on it white on rice, I guess, and was able to recover that ball. Now, two plays later, it was an interception. It was a turnover. So you could say, whatever. But nonetheless, Proctor made a good play there. His awareness, we'll take his awareness and his improvement, and we'll go from there.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. Like we do, let's flip the field and talk defense. I thought the Alabama defense was the buoyant factor for this team's performance Saturday. The offense was phenomenal. It had some up and some down. I thought the defense as a whole was a lot more steady on the day. Alabama defense allowed A&M only 4 of 12 on third down possessions or third down conversions, 0 of 1 on fourth down conversions, held A&M to 306 yards and total yards, and held A&M to only 67 yards rushing, an average of 1.9. Now, everything that I'm kudoing the Alabama defense for, hey, A&M defense did the same to Alabama. And so, and in fact, their numbers in some of these areas are better. I think 4 for 12 on thirds was the same. I don't think Alabama went for it on a fourth. Alabama did have more total yards than A&M, but the rushing yards was significantly less than 67. In fact, the net was 23. And so A&M averaged 1.9. Alabama averaged 0.9. So embarrassing things there. So we don't talk about the opponent defense other than, in the context of our offense, but hats off to the way that they played. Indeed, hats off to the Alabama defense as well. Alabama defense had a huge interception. Caleb Downs, we're going to talk about that here in a little bit. And the Alabama defense mustered 5 sacks, which was certainly nice as well. The Alabama defense not only strung together a collection of big plays, but the timing of the plays were nearly perfect. And I'm going to run through a couple of things, a couple situationals in the second half. Alabama trailing by 7, moving the ball to start the second half. This is Alabama's first possession of the second half, down by 7, through an interception. Alabama did. 2 plays later, Caleb Downs picks off Max Johnson, which sets up Alabama's tying touchdown. So again, if Alabama doesn't intercept the ball, there's an opportunity for A&M to go up by 2 scores. The flip of that happens. Alabama gets the ball back, essentially trading interceptions, gets the ball back, and is able to tie up the game. that's a big moment, timing, right? That's a big moment for the Alabama defense. Alabama forced two punts, allowing the offense to take the lead, allowing Alabama to take the lead. So right after the interception, Alabama scores to tie the game. The defense forces two A&M punts, and in that sort of sandwiched in the middle possession, Alabama is able to score a touchdown to go up by seven to take the lead. And so, again, that's just the timing there, the defense stepping up. We're going to break serve. We're not just going to trade touchdowns here. We're going to score to get back in it. We're going to hold them down, suppress their ability to score while we score again. We're going to take the lead. So that's a 14-point swing. You're down by seven. Now you're up by seven. It's a 14-point swing enabled by certainly the offense delivering, right? But the defense for holding serve there. So I think that's phenomenal. Alabama defense. Late third, in the fourth, Alabama defense forcing a safety, which with just savage, defensive line play up front. The forced safety, and I'm going to weave some parts here together, because this forced safety was huge. It was tremendous. Alabama defense forced the safety right after the Alabama offensive possession that was a result of the blocked punt. And so the blocked punt, which should have been its own touchdown, resulted, that possession resulted in no points for Alabama. And so the safety sort of salvaged that possession in a manner of speaking. Alabama had to relinquish the ball to A&M and then immediately forced a safety. And so Alabama got 2 points from defense coming off of a free possession off a blocked punt that resulted in no points. And so the defense said, screw this. This should somehow net in some points. We're just going to get a safety because that's the best kind of we can do. And so they scored the safety. It's critical, not just because of the exchange and like, oh, math says Alabama should have points here. And so here's some points. It's critical because it made it a two-score game. It took the 7-point lead to a 9-point lead. Am I doing my math right? Yes. It took it to a 9-point lead. So the fact that it made it a 2-point possession was critical because subsequent to that, A&M was driving, had an opportunity to score. In fact, Ania Smith almost scored, but was out of bounds at like the 2. And the Alabama defense, again, stood up. Texas A&M had a first and goal at the 2. The Alabama defense stood up and kept A&M out of the end zone. Also burned a critical clock time. A&M started that possession with 3 minutes and 16 seconds left in the game. At the end of that possession, there were 2 minutes and 11 seconds. So burned more than a minute, or caused A&M, forced A&M to burn more than a minute trying to get into the end zone. They were unable to get into the end zone. And because it was a two-score game, A&M appropriately, correctly so, they went for the field goal, knowing that, hey, we've got to score twice. Let's not lose. And I went back and listened to Fisher's press conference, and he's exactly right. We could go for it here and not get it, and they've stoned us before. We could not get, and then the game's over. And we lose by 2 scores. Let's get the field goal, live to fight, extend the game, right? Let's put the game on the remainder of the minutes, the remainder of the plays, not on this one play. I think that's the right decision. And so they kicked the field goal, made it a 6-point game, and then went for the onside kick, and they weren't able to retrieve that. And again, that's just the nature of the play. But the way the defense rose up to these moments, to these occasions, to sort of bail out the offense or bail out a special teams player, bail out, you know, whatever. The way the defense rose to these occasions, it's a little bit epic in nature. And I was very, very pleased, very, very impressed with how the defense in the second half just played to a standard that was phenomenal and enabled some shortcomings by the offense, by special teams. Sort of allowed the Alabama team, the team as a whole, to rise above those moments. So anyways, a lot of emphasis I put in the defense there. Now, we can call out individual players because, you know, we do that as well. Tim Keenan had eight tackles. Holy cow, Tim Keenan had eight tackles and are in on eight tackles. He also had a sack. That is phenomenal. When we talked about we need, Alabama needs help at the defensive line. It's a weak position. We need players to emerge. Losing Jamil Burrows at the beginning of the season for appropriate reasons, but he was depth. He was a known quantity. Alabama could very well use him this season. The fact that Alabama is getting depth and production from the remaining defensive line is heartwarming, I'll say. It's not altogether a surprise because we knew the names, we knew the players, we knew that they had talent. They just hadn't put it together quite yet. And Keenan was one of those names sort of on the list, maybe at the lower down on the list. Is he capable of sort of stepping in? And, you know, without question, he has. And that's phenomenal. So that Tim Keenan contributed to eight tackles and had a sack Saturday. Phenomenal. We need more of that, Tim. We want more of that. We enjoy it. We love it. Caleb Downs, we've talked about Caleb and his big play. He was also in on seven tackles, had the interception we've talked about. Justin Boybe probably had his best single game performance since his injury. Ooh, that's nice to see him round back into form. Because I've said this before, and so drink, I guess, but Boybe was having his best play. I think he had his best game as an Alabama player, and I want to say it was the Vanderbilt game, before he had the neck injury in practice. And we had predicted he is going to be emergent over the second half of what would have been last season. Well, it's, you know, ballpark, it's about a year that he's had chance to recover, get back in the program, get healthy again. And he had one of his better days of his career Saturday. He was in on five tackles, one and a half sacks. And if he emerges over the second half of this season, like we predicted the second half of last season, ooh, that's going to be really nice for this Alabama defense and really nice for this defensive line. So keep an eye on Boybe. And as soon as I say that, I think maybe I should just keep my mouth shut because last time. So anyways, we're not going to talk that into existence. Deontay Lawson was in on five tackles. He had a pass deflection. And more importantly, we're so pleased to have Deontay Lawson back. His contribution is bigger than his stat line because he lines up. He's a play caller on the defense. And so getting him back in that position, we talked about run fits and such last week with Mississippi State. Getting Lawson back this week to operate in that capacity, very, very, very nice. Kool-Aid McKinstry, we continue to enjoy his phenomenal play. Make the tackle, don't always go for the strip, I'd say that. Terrion Arnold had a tremendous day. And in fact, I want to talk about Terrion Arnold in the context of Malachi Moore going out. Ooh, man, it hurt to see Malachi being carried off, not limping off or not just like on the shoulder of one guy, but two trainers, one under each arm, carrying him. He's putting zero weight on one of his legs. And you think, oh, man, that could be as bad as it looks like it could be. And it turns out it's a sprained ankle. And so that could mean a couple of different things, a high ankle sprain versus, you know, sort of a regular. He was walking around in a boot after the game, but it's not a knee. And so you start sort of, it's not this, it's not this. And so what is it? It's not a knee. It's not definitionally season ending. Okay. That's awesome. And so is he going to play against Arkansas? I don't know. Do we need him to play against Arkansas? Probably not. And will we get him back for, you know, LSU and Tennessee and those games? Yeah, probably so. I think that's going to be a goal. We'll see how that unfolds. Just happened yesterday. We'll learn more at Monday's. I'm recording this on Sunday. So by the time you get this, we'll know more. We'll know more because of Saban's presser on Monday. So we'll see how that goes out. But when Malachi went out, we talked about the secondary and the shuttling and the moving of the moving parts and pieces in the secondary. And so when Malachi went out, we saw a lot of that sort of materialize. Terrion Arnold went from corner to the star position, and Trey Amos, a transfer, came in to backfill at the corner position. We'll sometimes see that historically when, well, this season, when we've gone to not a nickel, but to a dime, we'll do sort of the same things. And Malachi will move back out to the money position. He'll go from star to money, and then and then we'll see Terrion go from corner to star, and then Amos will come in. And so it's always kind of interesting, like, when what's the indicator that we're in a dime? Well, who's the guy that rotates in? It's been Amos. He just plays corner, and the other two guys shuffle. We kind of did a version of that with Malachi out. Now he's out. Instead of moving to the money, he's out. He's moving to the bench. And so Terrion moves over, which positions Terrion to make a nice play down the field on Aeneas. It would have been interesting to see if Malachi would have made the big that same play. I don't know. But nonetheless, we see Terrion Arnold at the star position. We see Trey Amos at the cornerback position. And there was a play or two where Alabama did go to the dime with that configuration, and we saw Christian Story come in. And so he is a player that has not played a whole lot, and sort of he lost his opportunity, I would say, with the transfers that came in. It sort of upped the level of competition, and he was sort of knocked out further down the page. And it turns out, look, he was in the seventh best DB as opposed to sixth. And so in this arrangement, in this configuration, Christian Story comes in to man the dime positions. So it's interesting to see all of almost the shell game, not like we're parts and pieces piecing it together, but there was a lull where the Alabama defense was sort of figuring itself out there and wondered, with all the things that the self-imposed situations, negativity that the team is experiencing, does this real life injury, is this too much for the team to overcome? And the team, the defense sort of rallied around it, improved, and said, no, it's not too much for us to overcome. And so in the intro, when we're talking about this being a resilient team, this team bouncing about, this team hurdling hurdles like an Edwin Moses, this is one of those hurdles. We've got a third-team guard in there, and we're replacing Malachi Moore, who is a vocal leader on the defense. He's not just a good dude that's out there, but he's one of the better players on the Alabama defense. He's one of the better players on the Alabama team. And to absorb his loss and bounce back again against an opponent like A&M, a talented team like A&M, it speaks really highly of this Alabama team, its resolve, and certainly this defense as well. All right, so I've said enough there. Mini game ball for defense. I'm going to go Trey Amos for all the reasons we've talked about. Yes, Trey Amos did get a penalty. It was a pass interference. It was defensive holding. And there's a part of me, and you know, on TV, they didn't show all of the replays like I wish they could have or would have. But there's a part of me that wonders if, hey, you hold instead of give up a touchdown. And so is a defensive hold, like literally a defensive hold, rather than giving up a touchdown. So that would be interesting to see footage on that. Also noted that he was not specifically targeted. Texas did target him a month ago, earlier in the season. I didn't see A&M specifically do that. I don't know if just they didn't notice or they weren't sort of playing that. That wasn't an angle. A&M has a lot of really talented receivers, so I don't know why they wouldn't specifically, you know, try to poke at that. And it could be, and again, it's harder to see from TV, but it could be that Amos was really tight in coverage. And so there was no need to try to pick on him because clearly he's playing the coverage patterns very, very well. Again, I don't know that. That might be something to keep an eye on. If Malachi is going to be out for a couple of weeks, then it may be interesting to see if teams having the benefit of game planning for it if they don't take shots at Amos. So that's not me mad at the guy. That's just me mad at the, you know, I'm not mad at anybody. I've always said the guy opposite Kool-Aid is going to get targeted. And so if it's Amos and then, you know, he's our third string corner, if we go after him or if a team goes after him, is that going to be a surprise? No, it's to be expected. The bigger surprise is A&M appeared not to do it, except for the one play with a penalty. And again, he could have had good coverage after that. So we shall see. All right, let's talk about special teams. Will Reichert, he was 1-for-1 on field goals. He had a 39-yarder. He was 3-for-3 for his PATs. I read somewhere he's 51 points away from being the all-time leading scorer in the SEC. Damn, that's impressive. We need to figure out how to make that work. If that means we go out against some of these teams and just kick a shit ton of field goals. I'm okay with that. Hey, let's score 51 touchdowns over the balance of the season and let them get us PATs that way. I wouldn't sneeze at that either. But yeah, if there's a way Will Reichert can get that, we support that. We need that to be true as Alabama fans. James Burnup, God bless him. As soon as we just really pile on the bandwagon talking good things about him, it's not that he has a bad day, it's that he gets injured. So Burnup had two punts for 92 yards. He averaged 46 yards on those punts. Now, he did have a long of 63, and so that means he did have a shank. If 63 of his 92 were in one punt, and so I'm doing math on the fly, what's that, 29 yards? And so he did have a shank, and I think that's the kick that he was injured on. So I don't know if it was an injury that he'd sort of been nursing and that kick sort of brought it to bear or whatnot. He did not return the rest of the day. And so Will Reichert assumed duties as punter as well. And what a phenomenal day he had. He had four punts for 165. He had a 41.3 yard average. So his average was below what Burnup has been averaging. But 41.3 is not bad. And he had a long of 45. So he had a tight, his punts were in a pretty tight grouping. So it was pretty, he was right at about 40, I guess, for the other three. Kendrick Law is credited with 80 yards on kickoff returns. Those are empty calories. Those are eating Twinkies. Kool-Aid McKinstry was one for negative one on his punt returns. I'm just going to leave that there. Chris Braswell blocked a field goal and returned it for a touchdown, except for Dallas Turner, don't put hands on a man that doesn't need his hands put on him. 15 yards behind the play, Dallas Turner blocked. They're saying a blindside block. Now, I don't think it was worth the penalty because he did look like he reached in front of the guy. But it doesn't matter. That could be Usain Bolt. He's so far behind the play, he's not going to make the play. And so don't put your hands on him. Just let him be. Don't put the officials in a position to have to make a judgment call. Just don't touch them. And then there's a 70-yard touchdown, and the game's over before it's over, because now Alabama, at that point, Alabama would have gone up two scores, 14 points, as opposed to eight, or as opposed to nine, two scores. Alabama would have been up by 14 points. It's a little bit soul-crushing, and certainly the momentum would have been on Alabama's side earlier in the contest. We kept them around, kept giving them an inkling that they could potentially have a last play. And so again, Dallas Turner, don't put hands on a man that doesn't need hands put on him. And man, I'm going to call out a player. And as soon as I got off the recording last week, I said, I forgot a guy. And so I want to get my guy in this time. Quandarius Robertson. Robertson. This is 2 weeks in a row where he has had a touchdown saving tackle on special teams. And so Quandarius Robinson, and I want to talk about Quandarius just a little bit. Quandarius Robinson is the guy that Saban almost went nuclear on the sideline of the Tennessee game last year when Quandarius touched a punt that didn't need to be touched, and that allowed Tennessee to retain possession of the ball. That was a big play in a game that Alabama lost, and we wish it wouldn't have happened. And Quandarius, I thought he might be thrown through the transfer portal at some point during that game last season. Well, Quandarius has hung around, speaks to his mental reserve and tenacity and his grit and the underlying relationship that Saban has with his players, because there's moments of passion and there's ongoing relationships. And Quandarius has come back. He is in the rabbit rush package. If Alabama puts three outside linebackers on in a rabbit rush blitz situation, Quandarius Robinson is the first one in. He is that guy. And he plays a lot of special teams. And 2 weeks in a row on coverage teams, he has made tackles that would have prevented, or that did prevent, touchdowns by the opponent. So good on Q Rob in that regard. All right, next up for Alabama is homecoming. And after some brutal, I'll say brutal, Mississippi State's a tough place to play with those clanging cowbells, and A&M with the 12th man and 106,000, and, you know, they do Yale training and and such. That can be a loud environment as well. So getting Alabama back at home, literally for homecoming, but back at home is certainly nice. Arkansas coming to town is a really good matchup, I think, for Alabama. I like KJ Jefferson, probably one of the better quarterbacks in the league. I like Rocket Sanders at the running back position. I think they're a tough physical team. Their game, they fight, but I think that fight's fading a little bit. And we have an interview this week. We do have an interview lined up with Arkansas, and we'll kind of poke at that a little bit. We'll talk about where sort of the headspace is of the Arkansas team coming into this game. I think it's a good matchup for Alabama. It'll be a physical game, but I think it's also a little bit of a get right game for Alabama. No disrespect to Arkansas. I think we have teams trending in different directions. I'll say that. I think this is a 42-14 style game, and it'll be interesting to see truly how that plays out. I do think there's an opportunity for some of the younger running backs to get into the game, and I'm not rooting. I'm going to say this, and I want to be careful this season as opposed to other seasons. I do think there's an opportunity for Ty Simpson to come into the game. That's not to overthrow Milroe, but that's just because maybe the score has gotten to a comfortable place that we can rotate in some more depth. Quarterback being one of those positions, potentially some of the linemen, certainly some of the running backs, and some of the receivers as well. So that is the type of mindset. That's the type of thinking that really kicks Saban over the edge. But from my vantage point, I think this game is going to yield some of those opportunities. All right, administratively, in our virtual tailgate on Saturday, we always do a prediction for the upcoming game. And the final score of this game was 26-20. And we had a couple close to that, but Jordan picked 23-20. So he was off by three in that regard. So good on Jordan. Good on Jordan for that pick. So Doug will get your prize out to you, and we'll go from there. If you want to be on a virtual tailgate, and our next one is Thursday night, we do Thursdays for Alabama home games, and we do Saturday mornings for away games. So our next one is Thursday night. If you want those instructions, how to participate, what's the link, how to get on the virtual tailgate calls, then reach out to us, alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com, alabamafootballpodcast.com. There's links and information there. But if you'd like that information, reach out, and we'll talk about how we get that out to you. In the meantime, what do? We roll Tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course, roll Tide.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.